from the Guinness Virgin and 91.1 WZBT Gettysburg. I'm Ben Ponce, and this is On Target.
I'm Gauri Mangala. Today on Target, we'll be discussing Student Senate updates and the Student Success Task Force.
Then we'll sit down with Anna Perry, Program Coordinator for the Office of LGBTQA Advocacy and Education. Stay with us. All right, well, let's get into it as far as the news goes. Gauri, what's been going on in the Gettysburg College Student Senate?
Nice pause. Dramatic effect?
Yes.
So Student Senate this week...
Nothing is dramatic except the Gettysburg College Student Senate. It is the most dramatic aspect of the Gettysburg College campus.
I'm sure Nick would love hearing you say that.
Nick is an avid listener. Nick Arbaugh, the president of Student Senate, is an avid listener of this podcast. So there you go, Nick.
I'm sure. So Student Senate just had a bit of a... I don't know. Like, you were talking to me earlier about this. I feel like I agree the fact that Student Senate just seems to be doing their thing. Budgets and recognitions and derecognitions, they've all been pretty quick meetings. A few constitutional amendments. I know right now they're talking about Abby Hauer, parliamentarian of Student Senate. A constitutional amendment that she presented was tabled last week and will be discussed this Monday surrounding... Putting in language into the Constitution regarding abstaining from decisions when you have vested interest in the clubs that they revolve around. For example, Nick is president, I believe, of Young Americans of Freedom, so he would abstain from, well, he doesn't have a vote, but a senator who has vested interest, let's say Grace Wenzel, for example, would not vote on any budgets regarding college Democrats.
So the point is that if you're an executive board member of a club, you're not allowed to vote on their budgets or other things pertaining to that club?
Yeah, essentially. So it seems as though if you're just like a constituent of the club, you can vote, but you can take your own, I guess, opinion about it. If you feel that you're severely involved in a club, you can choose not to vote. And abstain. However, I do know that some people were mentioning the fact that before this past week, whenever voting, it was just ayes and nays, and abstentions were not even questioned. But hopefully that will be brought up a bit more after this amendment's passed.
I was going to say, I know that in the past, some senators have abstained from budgets on which their club, if they're a member or an officer in that club. I'm thinking of a particular example last year when Nick Arbaugh abstained from it. Substained. That's not even a word. Abstained from a budget for YAF. And so is this, in your reading of it, more a codification of something that's already in place, or is this a new thing?
I believe I agree with that assessment of it. I think part of it is that Luke Frigon, nothing against Nick Arbaugh, but Luke Frigon, former president of Student Senate, was very good about always asking for abstentions. And I don't know if part of this is just reminding senators of the existence of that. I do, like, I sit around by the senators and I do hear murmurs of why weren't abstentions asked for budgets and for recognition. I think it may be part of that as well, just trying to remind everyone that they exist.
Yeah, I know there were some issues with high numbers of people abstaining from votes last year simply because... abstaining, the concept is that you abstain when you have a conflict of interest, not when you don't want to take a position on something.
Yeah.
I mean, you could even say in the United States Senate, for example, you don't abstain unless you can vote present in certain circumstances, but there are specific delineated reasons when that can be the case. You know, it's not... The sense that I got watching Senate last spring, in particular when a lot of these abstentions were occurring, that it was people didn't want to have to take a position, so they abstained.
Yeah, that was the case, especially with the James O'Keefe situation that YAF came to bring James O'Keefe onto campus. I do remember that Pat McKenna, former parliamentarian, ended up calling for a roll call afterwards because, it was really hard to tell between the ayes and the nays. And as soon as roll call happened, we noticed a lot more people abstaining. And that happened a few times. Whenever roll would happen, you could tell that people were changing their mind based off of the fact that now they were going to be, presenting...
On the record.
Yeah, on the record presenting their opinions, especially in a more controversial setting like the James O'Keefe conversation. However, I do think, a lot of it does have to do with accountability of making sure that, you are a student leader and it is your job to be voicing your opinion on this, and abstaining is for when you have vested interest. It's not for, you know, being uncomfortable voicing your opinion. If, frankly, I don't think that you should be a student senator if you're uncomfortable being on the record about your opinion in a decision of a budget request or recognition. If you don't have, if you don't feel comfortable doing that, maybe this isn't the job for you.
Well, I mean, I think to that point, no one, you know, maybe to take a slightly softer and or more diplomatic position than that, as, you know, I'm apt to do, is that no one is electing a senator to, no one is voting for their senator hoping that they won't take a position on something. And so, you know, I think you're 100% right that the idea of avoiding the question by abstaining kind of belies the notion of student representation in an activist body such as Senate. There were also a few clubs that were recognized on Monday.
Yeah, so a couple of clubs were derecognized. Finance and Investment Club, Model Arab League, and Rotaract were derecognized because they hadn't registered with OSAGL. So I believe they're
Office of Student Activities in Greek Life.
Yeah, so I believe they were also derecognized, like, from the college as a whole, not just from Student Senate. But Ethics Bowl Club, which will... They are essentially a debate team, but specifically on ethical matters, and they hope to, you know, discuss these matters this semester and then get funding to be recognized and be able to go to Ethics Bowl events in the future. And also the Fellowship, which has been Ethics Bowl Club is a new club, and Fellowship, and the Fellowship, F-E-L-L-A-S-H-I-P, has been around for a couple of years. It's a conversation group for men of color. However, they were emphasizing that it is a space for all people. They wanted to join Student Senate, I believe mostly just to get the word out about their club a lot more than they already were. They were having issues with attendance. And they have mentioned that they have partnered up with Brown Nipple Collective, which I believe is student recognized, and a few other clubs for events. And they, I believe, hosted MidMat yesterday.
Yeah, I know that the Fellowship was a club or an organization that a senior who recently graduated, Ty Abdul Karim, was involved with. I remember reading about that on the college website. And so two new clubs and a few derecognitions. So other than that, budgets were approved this past week.
Yeah, a lot of budgets were approved. It seems like it's pretty quiet in Student Senate, and I don't know if that's because last year was relatively loud in Student Senate. But other than, you know,
regression to the norm.
Yeah, perhaps that's what it is. But, you know, other than a few issues, I know Haley Gluhanich has, the treasurer of Student Senate, has been having some issues with the fact that we have a new budget request form, and that apparently has been causing some issues of people not using the right form.
Yeah, let me jump in on this one.
Okay.
The old budget request form exists on the college's website. I know that Student Senate has a new website that they want everyone to use, and the new budget request form is on that website. But just purely as a practical matter, if you don't want people using a form, take it off the internet. Okay, rant over.
I can't say I disagree with you, but essentially...
I like to say self-evident things that no one else says. Yeah.
So, for my sanity, more than anybody else's, because I do live stream every Student Senate meeting, please, clubs, just use the right budget forms. Just do it so we don't have to hear about it at every Student Senate meeting.
What's the new website? GettysburgStudentSenate.org.
Yes, yeah, that is... Go check it out.
We spoke a couple weeks ago on this podcast with Grace Wenzel about that.
Yeah, she's working hard about it. If you have any issues with it, I believe she is always willing to take feedback about it. So, Ben, also last week, well, I guess yesterday as we're recording, yesterday or 2 days ago as we're recording this, the Fall Honors Day happened, at which 11 new members were inducted into Phi Beta Kappa,
it's a National Academic Honor Society.
The Smart People Society.
Widely considered to be one of the highest honors conferred across academia. And so Gettysburg College did admit 11 new students. They were Celeste Campbell, Caroline DeWitt, Leah Gulyas, Jay Hauser, Bailey Heath, Elena Keller, Savannah Labby, I may have just butchered that name, Stella Nicolau, Laura Waters, Kyle Woodley, and Kira Koch. Also recognized was Jared Richardson, a member of the class of 2018 who was unable to attend previously. So in the fall, students from the top 2% of the senior class in terms of GPA are considered. And the criteria is based on academic achievement, intellectual curiosity, and ethics and integrity. And so in the spring, students from the top 10%, I believe, are considered. So more students will undoubtedly be inducted at that time. But congratulations to those 11 students. Clint Bounges from the library is the secretary who runs Phi Beta Kappa at Gettysburg College. It's kind of an interesting model where Phi Beta Kappians? I'm not sure.
Like Kappians.
Well, you know, since we're giving shout outs to listeners of this podcast, Clint, feel free to let me know how many syllables there are in that word.
Hi, Clint.
Hello to Clint Bounges from the library. In any case, I work at the library. Clint is, in fact, my supervisor at the library.
He's my supervisor, too.
All right. Well, glad that we're over this library celebration. One other thing that was in this week's print edition, the Gettysburg College Student Success Task Force recently released some recommendations, largely centering on advising and the essential premise. I spoke with Rob Boyer and Brendan Cushing Daniels, the associate provost and economics professor, respectively, who co-chaired this task force. And the goal is essentially to increase retention rates between students first and second years. And so right now across campus, that's hovering in the around 90%. And, certainly I think the college would like to see that figure be a little bit higher. Certainly there are other colleges that would be very pleased with a 90% retention rate there. But in any case, the recommendations of this task force largely centered on improving the quality and assessment of academic advising by members of the faculty, something that is not currently assessed systematically in faculty evaluations, either quadrennial reviews, which are what occur for tenured faculty, and then in tenure decisions and promotion decisions. And so while advising is certainly something that the college has paid lip service to, and more than just lip service, I mean, it is a foundational component of what faculty are required to do. It is not assessed in the same way as teaching or research or faculty governance responsibilities. And that is the root of the recommendation that was made here. I think it's fair to say that students have had a wide variety of experiences with respect to faculty advising. And it's also worth noting that in 2011, a task force issued a unanimous recommendation to include academic advising as part of faculty evaluations, and it went nowhere. And so I think it's the members of this task force recognize that efforts in the past have fallen short to some extent, and they are looking for ways to, make those efforts not fall short this time. So that's kind of what the story is there. What else is going on around campus, Gari?
A lot of lectures, Ben. Other than that, I think, what's going on next week?
Well, as the news editor of the Gettysburgian, I'm sure that you're acquainted with all kinds of things that are going on. This past weekend was family weekend.
It was. Did your family come up, Ben?
Some of my family was here for the football game on Saturday, in which the football team was squarely shellacked by our
great
neighbors
verb.
To the south. I use active verbs. I was recently made fun of in a meeting of the Gettysburg staff for making that exact same declaration that I use active verb, but shellacked. How would you just, what verb would you say is appropriate to describe a 51-14 drubbing?
I think shellacked is a good one.
Shellacked it was. The football team. And so it was interesting, you know, in watching the game, the football team held its own for much of the first half and then just kind of, well, didn't as much in the second half.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that pretty much puts a button on our news segment. We'll be right back with the Bullet Report and then our interview with Anna Perry, Program Coordinator in the Office of LGBTQA Advocacy and Education. Stay with us. And now it's time for the Bullet Report. It's been another exciting week in Gettysburg College sports action. On October the 13th, the women's soccer team tied Muhlenberg 1-1. The field hockey team lost to Muhlenberg 1-0. The volleyball team lost to Muhlenberg 3-1. The men's soccer team lost to Dickinson 2-0. On October the 16th, the volleyball team defeated Shenandoah 3-1. On October the 17th, the women's soccer team defeated Susquehanna 1-0. The men's soccer team lost to Franklin and Marshall 1-0. On October the 19th, the volleyball team lost 3-2 to Swarthmore. The field hockey team lost 3-2 to Swarthmore. The men's soccer team lost 2-1 to Swarthmore on the 20th. And the football team on Parents Weekend lost 51-14 to Johns Hopkins. The women's soccer team lost 1-0 to Swarthmore. Thus endeth the Bullet Report. We'll be right back with Anna Perry.
And we are joined today by Anna Perry, class of 2021, who has been featured in a few articles in the Gettysburgian off late, one about the queer assembly at the Women's Center and one about their experience in the physics department as an activist of many groups of diversity on campus. Anna, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
Would you like to tell us a little bit more about yourself?
Oh, man. Okay. So I'm from upstate New York, physics and philosophy student, 18 years old. I shave my head. That's me.
And what are you involved in on campus?
Right now, I'm a student program coordinator for the LGBTQA plus Office of Advocacy and Education. I have a radio show called Voice of a Generation, where we talk about social justice issues. I work at the Center for Religious and Spiritual Life. I help with programs there. I think that's it. I don't know if I do more. I forget.
So why don't you talk first about your work in the Office of LGBTQA Advocacy and Education. I know that Tiffany Lane, who previously was the director of that office, departed from the college last spring. And on an interim basis, Gretchen Natter, who's also the director of the Center for Public Service, is heading that up. But how has your role sort of evolved into one of leadership this year in that office with Tiffany Lane no longer being employed by the college?
So good question. How has my role evolved? So at first, I honestly really wasn't sure what was going to happen when I got the job. It was kind of unclear what that was going to be. And when Tiffany took another position, my role kind of changed also, because before, you know, like, the director would be running. I don't even really know what the director did, because I wasn't super involved with the office last year. But the director would be doing her thing, and then student program coordinators were kind of just, you know, like, doing, like, side projects and events. But with Gretchen being the interim director, it's interim, you know, and she isn't queer. She isn't really directly involved in that work usually. So she's more just here to keep things from falling apart, but she's not really an active director in the way that we want directors to be, not in a bad way, just because she has a full-time job already. So, you know, that's not really her job.
Right.
So, yeah, right now it's kind of become, I mean, I get the sense that I've kind of become the queer face on campus, which I wasn't really signing up for. So it's been a lot, but it hasn't been negative. It's just been, you know, me and Gretchen are taking it slow and not, we're trying not to put too much pressure on ourselves to do a lot because the office is in transition, so it's hard to get things done.
And what projects are you currently working on in that role?
Well, I've been doing a lot of, like, behind-the-scenes work. I've been working with professors and the institution itself to make behind-the-scenes changes so that it's better for students. So I'm looking at the way that teachers, you know, like, the way that they're mandated to conduct their classroom and how that's translating into student lives. I've also, we're looking at doing a second queer assembly, but that's going to be a minute because we are in the process of hiring a second program coordinator to help me out with programs. So we've just been taking it slow mostly and, yeah, partnering with people.
Yeah, and can you talk about the first queer assembly that you held and sort of what the goals were and what came out of that? I know that you spoke to one of the Gettysburg's reporters about it shortly after it happened, but in case folks haven't, you know, read that or aren't familiar with the concept or what happened.
Yeah, so the queer assembly, it was supposed to be a gathering of students. They didn't have to be queer, just students who felt marginalized on this campus because things were happening with freshmen very early on, like before classes had even started. There were bias incidents. There were things making them feel like they didn't belong. And I had gone through the same things my freshman year. Me and my friends still go through that all the time. And I don't know, I was just really upset about it because I was close with a freshman and I didn't want them to suffer in that way because it doesn't have to be happening. So I just made the queer assembly for that. I didn't really know what was going to happen. And, you know, some people thought it was cool, but it's also been brought to my attention after we had the interview and talked about the article that event really was still marginalizing people because I didn't do any icebreakers or really any social, like, games. You know, we kind of just, like, sat in a circle. We were eating food and, like, we talked for a bit and then people kind of broke into their own groups. Mm-hmm. But when you do that and you don't, you know, put measures in place to make sure people are talking to each other, the white students talk to the white students, mm-hmm. and then the students of color talk to the students of color. And, you know, students of color, it took them a few weeks because they were still processing, you know, like, it's hard to come forward and tell someone, like, hey, you messed up. But, like, they came to me and they're like, that was a disappointment. Like, I still feel marginalized. So it wasn't a perfect event, but we're working on it. The next one will hopefully be better.
Yeah, I know we've talked a little bit, you know, in the recent article I wrote about you, we were talking a little bit about intersectionality and how, like, you can't just talk about queerness without talking about color, and you can't just talk about color without talking about queerness. In those ways, I know you've experienced, you've been taking part in a lot of conversation groups on campus that aren't revolving around your personal identities. Like, while you identify as queer and can go to outer space and be very vocal about it, what has been your experience going to spaces like BSU and Lawson? You live in Latinx House. What has that been like, being a white student and entering those spaces?
I've learned to be a good listener. It helped me see, especially last year when I first started going to those spaces, it made me realize how terrible of a listener I was, like how much I was putting what I thought was a narrative onto people who I'd never spoken to. Like, I don't know anything about their life, and I was assuming a lot about them. So being in those spaces, it has helped me become a better listener, and it has also helped me realize what the queer community on this campus needs. Because, you know, like, with BSU, like, that's a national club, you know? Like, they're really strong. They've got that solid basis of what they're doing and what their club means. And I think that's something that queer communities everywhere really lack. You know, we don't have an automatic community. That's something that we have to search for, you know, some people their entire lives. So it's helped me visualize what I would like for a community. So, yeah, I've been learning a lot from people.
Mm-hmm. And some have, you know, I'm sure you've heard this before, but some have argued that spaces such as the ones we're talking about have can devolve into sort of echo chambers that sort of reinforce what people are saying and can almost inhibit change from happening. And I'm just curious to hear what your thoughts would be on that kind of line of thinking.
I mean, I don't have an answer to that. I think it's, no one has an answer, you know. I think it's fair to say that safe spaces, quote unquote, can be destructive, but especially for queer students, especially at a PWI, at a frat heavy school, we need spaces to go where we don't have to explain ourselves to straight cis people. That is a necessity. When we don't have that, you know, like, I really don't have that. Even with the spaces that we have set up, I don't feel like I have a space where I can just go to people who have the same perspective as me and, you know, relate about those things. And it's exhausting. And then you feel insane. You feel insane because you don't have anyone saying, yeah, what you're feeling is real and you're not just faking it. You're not making a big deal out of it. So those spaces are necessary. However, yeah, they can lead to polarization. They can get extreme, but I also know that's not the case with our clubs. You know, like with LASA, BSU, we want other people to come. Like, they always tell me, they're like, when I first got here, I was like, those spaces are only for people of color, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I shouldn't come. And then they're like, no, we want white people to come. We want your perspective. So I think that a lot of that is just the majority feeling kind of attacked by these spaces without seeing them. If you're gonna say that it's an echo chamber, at least go and see what's happening. That's what I did with YAF, by the way. And, you know, that's also had me feeling a lot of things because those students feel like they need a safe space because they feel like a minority on campus. They feel like they can't talk about their political views in public. And that's something I've been struggling with because in a way it's kind of fair. In a way it's not because they don't have structural challenges against them. So I'm still trying to figure it out.
Mm-hmm. And just one side note, if folks are off campus and may not be familiar, YAF, right, you're referring to the Young Americans for Freedom, a conservative political organization on campus. And just to kind of follow up on what you were saying there, it sounds like you're suggesting that these safe spaces are kind of part of the equation, but not the full equation, in that to some extent you're still looking for ways to foster dialogue across groups for folks who don't interact in those spaces. Is that fair to say, or are there other, or would it be the preference for folks to come into those spaces and experience the conversation in those spaces?
That's another thing I've been struggling with. Like, do I want to invite racist people into LASA when that's not even, you know, I'm a member of LASA, but I don't run that space. That space isn't for me. Mm. It's for Latin American students, and it's a privilege as a white person that they let me in to that space. So I don't want to invite, you know, Republican students into those spaces because, you know, I think they're welcome. They're welcome to come and listen. But if they're seeing those spaces as a platform for debate, they're disrespecting the space. So, yeah, I don't know. Like, conversations with groups that don't get along, I'm still trying to figure it out. I'm still trying to feel safe sitting in their spaces, you know. Yeah. When I went to YAF, when I went to the Young Americans for Freedom meeting.
Yeah, talk a little bit about that.
Okay. I haven't talked about this publicly, so this is interesting. Well, first of all, I was silent the entire time because I grew up surrounded by people exactly like that. So I already understand their perspective. I understand how they feel about people like me, people that I'm friends with. Yeah, and so it was really, really draining. It was really terrifying. I just didn't feel safe, especially because I could feel that they knew I didn't belong. They skipped over me when they were making nicknames for new members. You know, they didn't want to acknowledge my presence. They didn't like looking at me directly. And so it was really honestly dehumanizing. It was a lot. I had to like take a few hours after and just like calm myself down. And I'm sure that if they came to outer space, they'd probably be feeling the same way. And this is part of why I feel so conflicted, because I don't want to dehumanize them. And I don't know if taking that space away is the answer. I don't want to say no one can have these opinions because obviously people are going to. There's going to be a variety of opinions. Yeah, I don't know.
I know a lot of people have in the past, and we've also had discussions about this, talked about how outer space can feel like a political space at times. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of, you know, students that do identify as queer have even said that outer space just doesn't feel like a place for them to just be queer anymore. It comes with a lot of political things that they may not agree with. For you and for what you would like to see on this campus, do you think outer space, in the way it stands now and the way it stood last year as well, will work for this campus for much longer?
I think that outer space has worked for a small portion of the student body. Like, I don't think it makes sense to say that it's failing completely because it is helping certain people, you know, not the entire queer body of students. And I have no idea how many queer students are on this campus. I don't know how many people have gone to outer space and then decided to never, you know, associate themselves with the queer community. Yeah, so I do think if we see outer space as a space that should, you know, be a safe haven for all queer students, then 100% it's failing. It continues to fail every day and every week. That's something we're working on. I'm not technically even a member of outer space like that, but I have been trying to, you know, like talk to the members about some blind spots. Yeah, it's really hard to picture what I do want. You know, I want a unified community, but how does that work when within the community there are so many different labels, different sections that you can, like, you know, put yourself into? And I've been trying to look out to other communities. You know, like, I try to compare it to different communities, but the fact is that it's not like other communities. This is a really unique social situation. We're on an extremely heteronormative campus, and that influences the way you think and the way you act. And I think especially because our lives aren't threatened. My safety isn't usually threatened on this campus. Like, if I go two blocks outside of campus, then yeah, I don't feel safe. But within this campus, I can't say you guys are directly threatening my safety. You're directly threatening my way of life. It's just like, you guys don't want me around. You don't want to look at me. You don't want to be my friend. Mm. And so it's kind of just a thing of like, yeah, I'm safe, but I'm permanently a weirdo no matter where I go. and I am a weirdo, you know, I'm weird. So I don't know what to do about it. I don't know I think that maybe sometimes the people that are going to outer space are the people that need that space the most. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of non-binary students that come there, and I think that they need that space to be around other non-binary people. And then so, you know, people who are simply, you know, like, they're cis, but they're bi, maybe they feel like, you know, like, non-binary people, their issues are really different from mine, and they're really politicized because they have to be, and that's not what I'm about. And that's why they don't fit in. So I just don't know. I don't know if I'm silencing certain groups by making it more comfortable for less extreme people. Mm. And, yeah, this is something we've been experimenting with within outer space, like, now when we say safe space, it means anyone can air their political laundry, even if it means they're right-leaning or moderate. We're going to let them speak. And if you attack them, then we're going to silence you. Mm. And that's been interesting. And I don't think it's been entirely negative, but it's conflicting. I don't know how to feel about it.
Earlier you were mentioning how you want to look at how faculty look at their own classes. And you had spoken about how in the physics department they talk about identity within physics. For you, I think I remember, forgive me if I'm remembering this wrong, at one of the presidential search forums you spoke about this, how you want the next president to also be talking about identity within the classroom. What does that look like for you in, like, the perfect kind of mode?
That's a good question also. And again, it's hard to answer these questions because it's very easy to point to what's wrong with the system, but it's hard to imagine a future, like, what you want to build in the future and what a just system looks like. So that's, again, that's something I'm still figuring out. And as part of my role, I'm talking to professors who have been thinking about this and getting their feedback. And, you know, lately I've been kind of the opinion that academia as an institution is built on racist, you know, xenophobic values. And so if we want academia to be truly welcoming and truly just, we need to build it up from the ground up. Oh, which is, you know, not going to happen. I know that. It's not going to happen. Maybe not for like 100 years. I don't know what the future holds, but me personally, like right now, I'm just talking to as many people as I can about experiences that I faced with discrimination, especially within physics and philosophy, because those both are kind of harsh fields for minorities. So yeah, right now it just looks like dialogue and reminding teachers that their actions have huge effects on their students' lives. But I'm open to feedback, you know, about how that works, because I'm still trying to figure it out.
One thing that some folks have said before, and I'm not sure if this is your opinion or not, but is that particularly this year with Tiffany Lane no longer being at the college, that the queer community on campus is a little bit on the rudderless side of things, that without kind of a unifying institutional administrative figure, that the college is not doing enough to support students. So, first of all, I guess, do you think that is the case? And second, what would you hope that the next person in that position knows coming in, and what would you like to see them achieve or look to do?
Well, so I am a sophomore, and I only have so much knowledge about what changes the office made to the student body. I do know that when I came in, I heard Tiffany Lane's name, and I saw her at meetings, but for some reason, I'm still not really sure, I never felt like she was someone I could go to. I just saw her as someone that talked to the college and was the program coordinator's boss. I didn't really know what she does. I still genuinely don't even really know what the director does, and I'm helping define who's going to be the next director. Mm-hmm. So I think that it's a flawed model, honestly. I think that there are not a lot of openly queer people working for the college, and that's part of the problem. There aren't queer people in those conversations that guide institutional practices, and I think that needs to be happening. But genuinely, I don't see much of a difference with Tiffany's absence. I don't know what changes that's made, because I really wasn't paying attention that closely last year.
So do you even think that it makes sense to have someone in that position, or do you think that the model needs to be reconceptualized into a different format? And if so, what might that look like?
I do think that there needs to be a different model. And actually, so right now the office is conducting a review of itself, and I'm on that committee, so we're looking at, do we want to remain under college life, or do we want to be under a different department? Do we want a director still, which it looks like we do, because we're defining what we want that role to be, just redefining that role. So yeah, we are looking at it. But again, I'm 18. I don't know. This is my first foray into this world, so I don't know. I'm still figuring it out. I keep saying that, but it's just like, bruh, like, this stuff is just, academia is so slow moving, and they hate change. They don't want to change. They're comfortable with the way, and when you introduce a new way, they get scared. So, I don't know. I think that, I don't know. I just don't know.
It's okay.
Anna, if you, let's for sake of our imagination, think that we have the ear of who may be our next president coming in. What would you want them to know going in about the students, especially the students, the marginalized groups on campus?
I would want the president to know that every time they give a speech to a crowd of white people and talk about how great diversity is and all that this college has done, the students of color are looking at you pissed. They don't like that because you aren't coming to BSU meetings. You aren't coming to LASA meetings. You aren't coming to outer space meetings. You're not directly talking to us. You're talking for us. And you're treating us as little tokens that you're, like, gathering up. And the more you gather, the more woke you are. A part of this has to do with the business model of colleges. You know, like, diverse students literally are an investment. They pay more money. Like, they save their financial aid money to bring us to this college so that they can put us on their brochures and look woke, look like a woke college. I would just like the president to know that they don't have the trust of a lot of communities because of that business model. And if they want to get in touch with these communities of people, they need to acknowledge that and be willing to be humble about it.
Anna Perry, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
That's On Target for this week. We'd like to thank Anna Perry for being our featured guest today.
We would also like to thank the staff of the Gettysburgian and the executive board of WZBT for their ongoing support in this project. Be sure to subscribe to On Target on iTunes, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, or wherever else you get your podcasts.
On Target is a joint production of the Gettysburgian and WZBT. Our theme music was composed by Diego Rocha, a senior music major focusing on composition in the Sunderman Conservatory of Music. Shameless plug, his recital is coming up very soon. Visit gettysburg.edu/music for a full schedule of Sunderman Conservatory senior recitals. Have a great week.